Hello, and welcome to this audio edition of Philip Pusher's program notes for upcoming concerts by the Chicago Symphony Orchestra. I'm Rich Caparola, and concerts by the CSO on Friday, November 8th and Saturday, November 9th feature Riccardo Muti directing a program including the Overture to Don Pasquale by Donizetti, the Four Seasons Ballet from I Vesperi Siciliani by Verdi, a suite from the Megalopolis score provided by Osvaldo Golihov for the Francis Ford Coppola film, music by Chabrier, España, and suite number 2 from the Three-Cornered Hat by Manuel de Falla. Here are Philip Pusher's program notes on the Four Seasons from I Vesperi Siciliani by Verdi, the performance time around 29 minutes. There is wonderful dance music in many of the great Verdi operas, the offstage banda in the first scene of Rigoletto, the party scene in La Traviata, the ball at the climax of Un ballo in maschera. But Verdi wrote very few separate ballets, independent numbers, that bring the action to a halt and serve as an unrelated entertainment within the opera. That was not part of the Italian tradition. Verdi's first ballet was written in 1847 for Jerusalem, which was composed for the Paris Opera, where, following the beloved French custom, a third-act ballet was house policy. 8 years later, Verdi outdid himself with his next Paris commission, Les Vespres Siciliennes, the Sicilian Vespers, composing a large and elaborate allegorical ballet on the subject of the Four Seasons. Although there were more ballets to come from his pen for French productions of Il Trovatore and Macbeth, and for the premiere of Don Carlos, for example, nothing quite matched the size, scope, and sheer festivities of the Four Seasons ballet. Verdi's grand opera, it was translated into Italian in 1861 and has since become better known as I Vesperi Siciliani, is set at the time of the French occupation of the island of Sicily in the 13th century and the subsequent uprising by the people of Palermo on Easter Sunday of 1282. The bells that ring for Vespers signal the start of the uprising. In Act 3, Monforte, the French governor of Sicily, and Arrigo, a young Sicilian who is Monforte's son and sworn enemy, proceed to the Great Hall, where a ballet is staged for the entertainment of the governor's guests. The ballet of the Four Seasons has no direct connection, either musically or dramatically, to the opera itself. The composer later said it could be omitted without harm. But Verdi, among the most scrupulous and honest of musicians, nonetheless lavished all his customary thought and care on the composition of this music. The ballet of the Four Seasons is a marvel of orchestral color, imaginative writing, melodic abundance, and long-range planning. Verdi was working in a musical style that was still new to him and in a tradition that had not yet hit its stride. Of all the classic romantic ballets, only Adam's Giselle predates Verdi's Four Seasons. Delibes' Coppelia and the great Tchaikovsky scores come more than a dozen years later. Yet he composes music that is utterly natural and idiomatic, as if writing for a troupe of dancers rather than for supple Italian voices was his daily occupation and great love. Verdi wrote detailed notes about the choreography in the score, suggesting he had more than a passing knowledge of the vocabulary of dance. Verdi begins with Winter. A young woman, wrapped in furs and representing winter, steps out of an ice-covered basket. Three friends, all shivering in the cold, arrive and light a fire, but Winter prefers to dance to keep warm. Soon the ice melts to reveal bunches of flowers, from which rises the spirit of Spring, who begins to dance. Eventually, the flowers are replaced by ears of corn. Summer and her companions gather the ears. Too hot to dance, they choose to swim instead until a fawn chases them away. The basket is now covered with vine leaves and fruit. Autumn and her companions dance in celebration of Bacchus. Each of the seasons is treated as a series of varied dances and tuneful episodes. Verdi's prodigious melodic gift is on ample display throughout. Even such a formidable critic as Hector Berlioz had special praise for Verdi's dance numbers, particularly the pieces for Spring and Summer, which give the virtuosi of the opera orchestra a chance to display their talents. The Adagio for Spring is a delightful mini clarinet concerto. The haunting Summertime Siciliano with its plaintive oboe solo has been compared to Il Vecchio Castello in Mussorgsky's Pictures from an Exhibition, to which the dancers gather the corn in the noonday heat, is a marvel of atmospheric mood music. Throughout this ballet music, one hears echoes of moments in Verdi's operas, a soaring phrase from a tenor aria, the bustle of an ensemble finale, the glitter of a party scene. La Traviata was composed just 2 years earlier. But we also find Verdi obviously enjoying the luxury of writing, for once, for orchestra alone. Program notes by Philip Huscher on the Four Seasons Ballet from the opera I Vesper Siciliani by Verdi. And now, on to music by Osvaldo Golijov, a suite from his score for the Francis Ford Coppola film Megalopolis. The suite lasts about 18 minutes. And here are words by Golijov himself. Early in 2023, I visited the Megalopolis set. France's greeting after years of not seeing each other was, "Oh, Osvaldo, we need a big love theme because the love story is what will hook the audience the first time they see the film, and they'll come back later to absorb the other layers." "Great," I replied. "What kind of love theme?" He said, "Like Tchaikovsky's Romeo and Juliet, but geometric." I chortled at the perfect example of the language Francis uses to convey his vision. Utterly surprising, and surprisingly precise. Megalopolis happens in New York, sometime in the 21st century, but it is ancient Rome at the same time. Francis wanted music to play an important role for audiences to believe that we are in Rome. Nobody knows how ancient Rome sounded, but we all have Hollywood's Rome in our metabolism. We believe that Rome sounded like, for instance, Miklos Rocha's score for Ben-Hur. There are so many scenes that require this style of music that I decided to write an entire Roman tone poem that would make sense on its own as a piece of music unrelated to any specific scene, but with all its themes stemming from the Roman themes in the film. Most of those Roman themes are featured in movement 1 of this suite, a big imperial fanfare that acts as a recurring chorus in the piece. A majestic, heroic, exuberantly paced big section, noble at times and pompous at others. Cleopatra-like interludes, hazy, sensual, and with a certain Egyptian atmosphere. And finally, a lyrical version of the heroic theme. We extracted from that suite cues for many scenes in the film. Back to love. In the end, because of the story, I wrote 2 love themes. The first one is a tragic, sinuous theme for the love story between Caesar and Sunny, his first wife. This theme opens movement 3 in the suite, but the main love theme is the second one, yearning and hopeful. It grows together with the blossoming love between Julia and Caesar in the film. It appears in its original form and full bloom in the 3rd movement in the suite. In the film, it's played when Julia and Caesar kiss for the first time, right after the tragic theme. This main love theme is melodically and harmonically malleable, so that with very few changes it can morph into both the grand Caesar's Utopia theme, the last section of movement 3 in the suite, and Clodio's revenge theme, which is simply a noir version of this second love theme and is the entire movement 2 in this suite. A Roman theme not used in movement 1, the Saturnalia festival, opens movement 4 in this suite. This last movement, which is also the end music for the film, continues with a main section featuring both love themes in counterpoint and a reprise of the heroic Rome theme. It ends with a fast fugato on the strings, sustaining the Roman fanfare in the brass. Megalopolis is full of references. Francis has the entire history of cinema in his mind and heart, like other great artists of the past, especially in their late style, Bach, Beethoven, Verdi. Francis believes that if everything is too personal, it turns to smudge. Visually speaking, Francis told me how he could name a film that inspired almost every frame in Megalopolis. Accordingly, he also wanted specific musical references, such as Rocha's Roman music or Herman's music for Hitchcock or Prokofiev's Romeo and Juliet. playing with these references as if they were organ registers helps integrate both the story and the music with our own library as an audience and make both the story and the music richer. Words by Osvaldo Golijov himself on his suite from Megalopolis. And now on to Manuel de Falla's suite number 2 from The Three-Cornered Hat, the performance time around 12 minutes. One of music's great international collaborative efforts, The Three-Cornered Hat began life in 1916 as a modest pantomime called El Corregidor y el Molinero, The Magistrate and the Miller's Wife. The 1875 novel by Pedro Antonio de Alarcón, on which it's based, also is the source for Hugo Wolf's 1896 opera Der Corregidor. Sergei Diaghilev and his Russian ballet were visiting Madrid during the initial run of El Corregidor, and the impresario asked Falla to transform it into a ballet, expanded and rescored for large orchestra. Diaghilev had been urging Falla to write something for his troupe for years. At one point, they talked seriously about producing Nights in the Gardens of Spain as a ballet. In no time, Diaghilev put together an extraordinary cast of characters for Falla's ballet, with Leni Messine as choreographer and Pablo Picasso as designer. To help devise the choreography, Messine took flamenco lessons from Felix Fernandez Garcia, a phenomenal dancer whom Diaghilev found in a working-class cafe in the back streets of Madrid and persuaded to join the company as the star of the new ballet. Messine also admitted to finding many beautiful poses in bullfighting. Picasso designed sets and costumes that were characteristically witty and brilliant and devised a front-drop curtain depicting a bullfight in ochre, pale pink, white, blue, and gray that was so magnificent that Falla wrote some new music at the last minute just to show it off. Picasso finished painting the curtain during final rehearsals. Shortly before the premiere, Garcia became ill, and Messine had to take over his role. And on the afternoon of the first performance, Falla was summoned by telegram back to Madrid to his mother's deathbed, and Ernest Ansermet stepped in to conduct. But The Three-Cornered Hat was a triumph, and Messine later said that of his more than 100 ballets, it was the one of which he was most proud. He continued to dance the role of the Miller into the 1950s. Messia Sert gave a post-premiere party at which Rubinstein played the piano, and Picasso drew a laurel crown on the composer's bald head with his hostess's eyebrow pencil. Incidentally, The Three-Cornered Hat was the last ballet danced by Diaghilev's company on August 4, 1929, a fortnight before the impresario's death. The second suite of music from the complete score opens with neighbors gathering to celebrate the Feast of St. John and dancing seguidillas. Falla refashions a gypsy song from Granada. Next, the Miller begins to dance. In his memoirs, Messine recalls, "I began by stamping my feet repeatedly and twirling my hands over my head. As the music quickened, I did a series of high jumps, ending with a turn in midair and a savage stamp of the foot as I landed. The mental image of an enraged bull going into the attack unleashed some inner force which generated power within me. For one moment, it seemed as if some other person within me was performing the dance." The finale, propelled by mistaken identities and general confusion, eventually ends happily with the Miller and his wife reunited. Everyone joins in the Jota, a wild dance from Aragon. Program notes by Philip Pusher on suite number 2 from Manuel de Falla's The Three-Cornered Hat. I'm Rich Caparella. Thanks for listening.